I would like tonight to make a very sober talk. And in general, I should like to ask you, if you will, not to interrupt by applause, because I'm not interested in it, and I don't want to have that kind of atmosphere for what I have to say, because I'm going to be dealing with where we are in the civil rights movement, which is a serious matter, and I would rather see the time spent on writing or thinking through the questions where there is disagreement. I left Richmond this afternoon, where I had addressed Dr. Martin Luther King's organization on the question of nonviolence. It was just 7 years ago that the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was founded in the kitchen of Dr. King's home, where he and I and his wife were eating waffles and grits, which I loathe. It has come a long way, and much has happened in the movement, but I would like tonight to do three things. First, very quickly, to analyze what I think the meaning of the March on Washington was. Analyze why I feel that it was inevitable that these children should have been killed. Why more people are going to be killed. Next, to deal with the question of violence, about which there is all too much joking, kidding, ignorance, and misunderstanding. Seriously, practically. And thirdly, to make certain proposals, which I think we must face, to raise certain very fundamental problems with which we are faced. For while I believe that there must be an emotional surge to this movement, it must be tempered by a realization of what we are up against and what we have to do to get freedom now. It is the simplest thing for great hordes of people to scream out in auditoria every time someone says freedom now. It is a far different thing to know how to get it and to know how one is related to a concrete program for its realization. The March on Washington on the 28th of August came at a most propitious time and did certain things which it was calculated to do. Not merely to make Negroes feel good, or to show that when we are dressed up we can behave ourselves, or to indicate that we could come to Washington without bringing that thing with us. It was fundamentally that Mr. Randolph and others had analyzed that the truth that there was going to be a violent, miserable summer before us, given the economic condition of the Negro, was correct. And the first thing we wanted was something at the end of August, which Negroes in June and July and all of August could become so deeply involved in that the frustration which they naturally felt in this period could be creatively used. And there was no rioting in the industrial centers, which had been predicted and was on its way. Number two, when the civil rights movement began to go deep into the real problems, the segregated restaurants and hotels have never been the real problem. Public accommodations are the simplest thing to lick, And people are interested in them because the Negro revolt began as no other revolt that I know of in history began about. Not fundamental economic problems, but the problem of dignity. Therefore, in the early aspects of the revolution, theaters, hotels, and restaurants were important. But once the economic problem of the Negro was revealed to the Negro himself, and the problem went down to touch profound economic problems, such as where do Negroes get jobs now? We faced a new situation. When the problem emerges as to where do Negro children go to school, you get to a deeper level, particularly if you are talking about the North. And I want you to know that some of the most fascist behavior is emerging on Long Island, where crosses will be burnt increasingly, because white people on Long Island do not want Negroes to go to school with their children. When you touch the problem of the home and the job, the revolution becomes deeper. Now, therefore, we recognize that it was absolutely impossible, my friends, for the Negro struggle nonviolently to proceed further in any real way unless we could now get and increasingly get into the streets hundreds of thousands of white people who are now prepared to go to jail. Just economically, it is obvious that no minority representing one-tenth of the people can use the elements that it can suck up from itself merely to affect the behavior of the majority. They cannot create that much dislocation alone. Psychologically, it is also clear that great masses of white people in this country, including people in this room, when the time comes, look upon law and order, in quotes, as being superior to justice. And they will argue now, well, it was all right when it was just a freedom ride here or a bus ride there. But when they begin to disrupt everything, maybe they've gone too far. Maybe now we need law and order, which means let the Negro accept his inferior status for a few years more. This he will not do. And therefore, in order to keep the law and order argument truly the argument of justice and injustice, it must not now be Negroes alone going to factory gates, tying themselves on machinery, giving the impression that here are black people disrupting things, trying to get jobs for Negroes, take jobs away from white people. It was that we must now get thousands of white people in the streets to stand with these Negroes who must do these desperate things, so that it is clear that there are interracial groups who are just fighting against whatever injustice there exists over there. That is the reason we must have thousands of white people in the street. This is what makes the black nationalist and the Malcolm X analysis totally ridiculous. Now, the March on Washington achieved that symbolically. The Catholics, the Protestants, and the Jews, and the trade union movement, which is relatively progressive, joined with us and came into the streets. But more importantly, We succeeded through the march on Washington of getting the most extreme leftist action position of SNCC and CORE adopted and recommended to hundreds of thousands of people, white and black, the method of going into the streets and demonstrating. We had that presented under the Big Ten, which means the Catholics, the Protestants, and the Jews, including Cardinal Spellman, whose group finally sent $15,000. They called you into the streets. Now, that is new. Furthermore, the march on Washington meant something which we were irresponsible about. Anytime you got 250,000 Negroes in the street, harbinger of a new revolutionary drive, we should have known there would be bombings in Birmingham, that there will be even more, because in a revolutionary situation there is action and counteraction, always. We were derelict. We were not prepared for when that bombing came, which we should have anticipated in order that we could have had a program to address ourselves to about it. Now, my friends, I want to say a few words now about violence. And I am tired of being on the defensive about the nonviolent position. I want to take the offensive. Whoever in this church tonight says that he believes Negroes should now turn to any form of violence, let him stand up and I will show you a man who is prepared to do nothing about the problem except talk. And this is not a moral question. It is a practical one. I have never heard a man, white or black, advocate violence. And when I said to him, give me the plan, that he did anything but walk away because the objective situation will not permit a violent plan. I am tired of taking the defensive on this. Let's look at this more clearly. Dr. Martin Luther King, my friend, called for troops. I talked with Martin 2 hours last night, and he no longer calls for troops. Not because I convinced him, because he had changed his mind by the time the discussion began. But I want to look at what troops in Birmingham would mean. We cannot now be sloppy in our analysis. Troops brought into almost any situation answers the least important part of the question we are asking. What we want is that situation which both gives Negroes protection and makes progress toward integration possible. I will admit that if enough troops could be sent in, you may deal with whether Negroes can be brutalized in part. But the minute you bring them in, what you have automatically done is to expect those troops to defend the only thing they can defend, which is the perpetuation of the status quo as it is. That is all they will do. And when we argue for the bringing in of troops and the creation of violence, we are arguing fundamentally for putting into the hands of the most reactionary forces the totality of violence which they possess against our few sharpened razors and rusty muskets. Let us look again at the matter. How indeed do you defend the children of Birmingham against violence? There is only one answer. And that is, when we have built a mass movement in this country, including so many millions of people, that movement itself is the surest guarantee and the surest insistence on accommodation from the government. You will not get anything in a situation where even if troops went in, they would be anything but destructive. When we do not ask for the army and get 10,000 on the 28th, where they are not needed, you think in that situation where they are needed, if they came, they would be useful? How stupid is it possible for people to be? My friends, if I want to do anything tonight, I want to make one thing clear. That the meaning of the 28th is that without any bars, without any reservations, we see that we have these people on the run by the method of non-violence. It is non-violence which integrated whatever has been integrated, married to mass action. Therefore, I propose, my friends, that instead of talking about two guns, one of which will end up in jail and the other in Cuba, if they have room for one more over there, that what we do is to back up the proposal which I am putting before the Big Ten who put on the march on Washington. Go out and press for it in the organizations of which you are a part. And that is that we call for a nonviolent uprising, that on a certain day in October, we sign up 100 cities to move at once across the nation, south. They are ready for this in the south. They said so today, if we are prepared to do it here, to go out into these places. If 100 cities were on fire throughout this nation, with people sitting, standing, being arrested, refusing to cooperate, doing whatever they can, white and black together, I tell you, this is the thing which will make people think twice about bombing anywhere. Not because you threaten to use what you cannot collect, cannot hold, cannot use, and if you ask others to use it for you, they will use it in their interests, not yours. There is not much applause. That means there's a learning process going on. Next, I want us to glibly stop talking about the Great Revolution and how it is carrying on. We are losing the fight, my friends, quickly. Look up the date of last year. Look up the date from now, 2 years back, and you will see that there are more black children going to segregated schools in New York last year, this year than last. You will find that we are having greater segregation of housing all over the country. 5 years ago, Negroes and whites were living peaceably together in the South. Richmond, I could not believe when I saw it after 6 years. All the white people are in one end of town and all the Negroes are in the other. The South is adopting the pattern of housing of the North. Where have we gained? Where have we made progress? There are more Negroes out of work. This is a revolution which is succeeding. It is not, my friends. Now, one of the chief reasons for this is that there comes a time when no minority can move beyond a certain point without numbers of allies. But there are certain problems which are more difficult than this. And the chief one is that although the trade union movement is difficult, although there is prejudice against Negroes in jobs, although manufacturers don't want Negroes, although there is discrimination even in government in the hiring of Negroes, none of these problems is the problem for Negroes. The problem is that which deprives most Negroes or more Negroes of work than any other. And that problem is automation. Therefore, in the future, there is no way for Negroes to get jobs for Negroes. There is no way for the civil rights movement to get jobs for Negroes. Oh, of course, you will get a few apprenticeships here, all of which I am in favor of, after a great struggle. A few people will tie themselves to this and the mayor's office and that, and a few jobs will come. Thank God people have the courage to do it, and thank God we have examples of how the pressure must be applied. But when it comes to the economic problem of the black man in this country, he has no answer to that problem except as he fights against automation and carries the Negro struggle to a deeper level. And that deeper level is a struggle for a new political, social, and economic order in this country. And if the civil rights movement does not understand this, particularly since Norman Thomas has been telling them for 40 years, I don't know whether they'll pay any attention to me or not, but I think they'll pay more attention to me than Norman, precisely because Norman was a prophet and said what was to come. I am giving you the nitty-gritty of what's here now. I think that we may have to create something quite new in the civil rights movement now. There is a young girl working in Birmingham, Diane Nash Bevel. The Times referred to a plan today that she had drawn up. It's a magnificent plan, a master plan for forcing the agencies of government through our action to respond to us rather than our begging them. Another part of this plan, and you know, I'm not saying this is the world's greatest plan, I'm getting at something. Another part of this plan is that on a given day, certain companies be telephoned by people where they have their headquarters and to make it quite impossible for them to do business for 2 weeks. One of the reasons I'm so tired tonight is that Dick Gregory spoke last night at the banquet and received an award from Dr. King, whereupon Dick Gregory got three labor leaders and myself, locked us in a room and wouldn't let us get out till he had to get on his plane at 6:30 this morning, because Dick wanted to talk. He came up with a plan which I will not describe, lest it will be, it's a good plan, but I don't want anybody to say I stole Dick Gregory's plan and announced it before he did. That would not be conducive to the unity which I hope to create. Also, my friend, a group of Negro boys, most of them looking about 16, telephoned me last night and said if they drove up from Mississippi this morning, could I talk with them in Richmond today? I told them yes. They came. They had a plan. Now, isn't it interesting that everybody is beginning to have the emergence of a master plan, except the master organizations? I am thoroughly convinced that the next stage must be created. And it can be created by calling together what I respectfully refer to as the Young Turks, the creative ones from SNCC, CORE, Street Corners, and everywhere else. And perhaps we are going to have to create something simply called the movement, to which no dues are paid, which has no membership list, but is made up of people, wherever they are, who will lead the ground swell. For an example, the Justice Department has a responsibility now, but they are not going to take it, because we are not taking ours. Why should you call me on the telephone and tell me to do something? Simply because I've been elected? It's not close enough for me to be elected again to pay any attention to you. We need in every community a group of angelic troublemakers who really will disrupt. Our power is in our ability to make things unworkable. Not with any weapons, because that is not our weapon. The only weapon we have is our bodies. And we need to tuck them in places so things, wheels don't turn. We need to crush them into places where there's supposed to be oil, but we become sand and the thing can't turn. Now, when a group of people are prepared to join that kind of movement across the country, we will be able to say we know what we are prepared to do after the march. There have been a dozen propositions. One proposition for a Christmastime no buying campaign. Another proposition from some of the labor people. Let's pull people out of jobs. There's been another campaign of a symbolic work stoppage, and all these others. But my friends, I ask you, to what and to whom do these people go with these plans? Plans do not take wings like birds and fly. There needs to be the movement to whom they can come. The movement which is like an underground, except it's positively open, which has people in every community in the country signed up and prepared to go out like soldiers to do their job. We are not going to get it because great and greater numbers of young Negroes in New York talk more and more violently about things they do not do. We are not going to get it because liberals are so apt to criticize Dr. King, who is a Christian minister, because when talking about nonviolence, he talks about love, which is the only word he knows. We are not going to get it because we propose outlandish projects which will not work. We will get it in the way that a young group of Negroes who has been working for the March on Washington has gone out and recaptured 125th Street and 7th Avenue again from the fanatics because they came with a program to those people, talking about the rats in their apartments and the roaches and the fact that they are paying $25 for a room which ought to cost $10. These people can be brought into a movement where you are dealing with their problems. And I conclude by saying again that if anybody in this room dares to challenge the concept of nonviolence, which I have raised, I do not want him to ask a question. I want him, from wherever he is, to outline as clearly as I have tried to my theory of peaceful social dislocation, for him to outline 1, 2, 3, how his violent plan would work before he gets to Cuba.